as a minister and as a parent, I would just like to say that the more we can keep our hearts open to just loving and respecting people as they are, even when they're different from us, even when they're different from what we're used to or what we expect or what, you know, what we've understood the world to be, we can always grow. We can always learn more. And if we keep our hearts and our minds open, we can embrace people who are very different from us.
Welcome to the East Anchorage Book Club. I'm your host, Andrew Gray. The purpose of this podcast is to tell the stories of Alaskans of interest and importance. This episode is part of an ongoing series regarding transgender rights. Today, our guest is Becca Bernard. She is a former environmental lawyer and a Unitarian Universalist minister based in Anchorage. She is also mom to two children, one of whom is trans. The inspiration for this trans rights series is three bills currently moving through the Alaska State House. One which bans trans girls from playing girl sports, one which requires kids to get signed permission slips approving their preferred name and pronouns, and one which allows doctors to be sued up to 20 years after treating a trans youth. Alaska has many big problems. The pressing need to increase the funding of our public school system and finding a solution for an imminent energy crisis among them. But instead of working on those very real, very substantial problems, we are spending the last few weeks of session debating whether trans youth exist and have rights. They do exist. They do have rights.
Becca Bernard, welcome to the podcast.
Very good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Before we get started, just tell us a little bit about yourself. What's your background?
Sure. I am a resident of Alaska as of the last almost 25 years. I am a parent of two children. I am a lawyer, not practicing anymore, but I had a 20-year law career before I stepped away from that. I left that several years ago and went back to school, and am now a minister in the Unitarian Universalist tradition. I'm a community minister, which means that I am not a minister in a church, but I have the training and I'm doing a variety of different things.
Did you go to like seminary or divinity school, or I don't know what the training is for that?
I did go to seminary or divinity school. I think those are interchangeable. Yeah. I did that partly traveling outside to go to the school in person and partly doing some of it remotely from here. And that took me several years because parenting, working part-time. So that has been quite a journey.
And you have two children. That brings us to why you're here today. One of your children is trans.
That's right. Yep. I have two children and my older child is a trans girl. And both my children are amazing and wonderful and fabulous, and I adore them, as I know all parents do, adore their children. And yeah, it's been a journey, but it's been a really growthful journey.
I'd like to learn more about that, whatever you're comfortable sharing.
So we found out our older child was trans several years ago when she came out to us, dipped her toe in at first. She told us she wanted to use they/them pronouns, and it was several months before she fully came out as a trans girl. And perhaps that was testing to be sure that we were safe, that it was safe to share her full self with us, or perhaps that was just her own process of coming to really fully understand herself. But in any case, it was a process, and we certainly did not see it coming. I can tell you that. It's just not something that was on our radar, the possibility of one of our children being trans. So it definitely took us by surprise, us being my husband and myself. And we, as you can imagine, there's a whole range of feelings that go along, at least for us, for me, with hearing that from our child, which I can certainly talk about.
I was going to ask, how old was she when she told you that she wanted to use they/them pronouns?
So she was a teenager. She was mid-teens, already in high school.
And no, you had no clue up until that moment that was something that might be about to happen.
No, we had no clue. It's just not something we had considered. She was never a very sort of gender typical. She just didn't fit into stereotypes, I would say, of what a boy should be. But there were some things she did that were typical. I'm using air quotes here, typical boy, and some things that were really not. And I read that as, I don't believe in people following strict gender roles anyway for myself or my kids. So that's, I just took it as we're not following strict gender roles. So yeah, so it definitely was not something we had considered. It certainly wasn't something we were pushing. That's a narrative that I have heard now from the people who are pushing anti-trans bills. And that's certainly not what went on in my family. And I really doubt it goes on in other families, because being trans is not an easy thing in this world. And it's not something that you would push your child to do. You know, it brings up all kinds of questions of how they're going to be safe in the world with so much hateful rhetoric out there. And yeah, we were not expecting it. But you know, fortunately, I have known trans people. I had actually a very good friend who I worked with for a year, who was a trans man. And he was very open, and I had a lot of really interesting conversations with him about his experience as a young person, and then later as an adult, and coming out and living his full self as a trans man. And so I think it was really helpful to me that I did have that experience already and have that foundation of a real human close connection with somebody with a very different experience than my own. So yeah, that was helpful. But nonetheless, it was still a surprise. It still came out of the blue.
Were you and your husband skeptical? Did you think maybe this is just a phase or?
Yeah. So I would say that my very first response was just looking at this huge kind of unknown. What is this and what does it mean? And I don't know enough about it. And just this helpless feeling of, oh, I don't know what to do as a parent. I don't know how to approach this. And all the questions came up. Is this real? Is it a phase? Is she just exploring? I think all the questions that you hear probably went through my mind at one point or another. And at the same time, we wanted to support, like we immediately wanted to support her in whatever her process and her journey was going to be. So we supported her in, we found a counselor, somebody who seemed safe, somebody she could talk to and really just work on figuring it out. And we educated ourselves. So I think those were the first two things we did as a family, were learn more about this and find support for our daughter. And we found other parents. That was the other thing we did as well, was reach out and find other parents who were going through a similar journey so that we could get the support we needed to travel our own journey.
Sounds like you and your husband were on the same page and wanted to be as supportive as possible. Was your extended family also supportive? Was there anyone in your family who reacted negatively to this news?
We are both very lucky that we have families who are supportive and loving. And I really think that's an important thing in this whole discussion about trans youth, is just remembering love comes first before everything else. As a parent, and I think as any family member, what the youth needs the most is our love. And to know that they are going to be accepted, whoever they are and however they are. And we've been really lucky in that with our families. Even family members who were more skeptical or concerned at first have been respectful in terms of using the right name and using the right pronouns. And even though they have questions, or they don't really understand it, or they're not sure they really believe it, they're at least being respectful. And so we're lucky in that regard.
It sounds like you got a counselor right away. What has been the journey in terms of providing your trans child with the appropriate medical care in Alaska? And what does that look like for parents of trans kids in Alaska?
I don't want to talk about my daughter's medical journey, mm-hmm. because that's private. For kids generally in Alaska, I think it's important to know what one of the hearings recently pointed out, youth can get gender-affirming care in Alaska, but not surgery. Nobody can get any kind of gender-affirming surgery in Alaska. It's just not available. The providers aren't here.
And just to push on that, it's my understanding that it's generally accepted policy that it's very rare for any country to be doing gender-affirming surgery on minors, that surgery can wait until someone's an adult and can make that decision.
That's my understanding too. And I'm certainly not an expert in this. I certainly can't speak to what goes on in other countries, but that's certainly my understanding of what happens in this country, that it is very rare for a minor to receive any kind of surgery, that that's generally an adult process. But
yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, but puberty blockers and gender-affirming hormones are more readily, I say readily, it's still a very regulated process and very thorough and careful, but that care is available for minors in many states.
And my guess would be that folks with trans kids who are seeking medical care that might include some sort of medication, that there are steps to that, that someone doesn't show up at a new clinic and get prescribed a medication on day one. I think that there is a misconception by some that this is very easy care to get. I'm just wondering if you could speak to that.
There is a whole process. There's a standard. From my understanding, a person cannot just go into a clinic and quickly get any kind of treatment. Mental health treatment, sure, mental health support. But medical is a whole process. And there's a very thorough set of standards that's been set by the WPATH, which is the Professional Association for
Transgender Healthcare.
Yeah, transgender healthcare. And which is constantly being scrutinized and updated as new information comes in. So it is a very careful process, from my understanding. And from stories that I've heard, it can take quite a while, months and even longer, for youth to receive the care that they are seeking.
I've been trying really hard to be less hostile in my approach to discussing this issue with folks who are not supportive of the trans community because they've never met a trans person and they have no relationship with transgender as an idea, even. It's just something that's very foreign to them. And I think part of that is like when I went to school, there were no trans kids in school with me. And so the fact that there are trans kids in school now is different than when I was in high school 30 years ago. And so if I give them the benefit of the doubt, if they're saying like, oh, well, there's something that's causing there to be more trans people.
It seems to me that what has happened in recent decades is there has been more public acceptance of trans people. And because of that, more trans people have been willing to come out and be themselves publicly. So it may be that there were people, say in my high school class, who really were trans but didn't have the space or the safety to really live as themselves. Of course, there aren't trans people in every place, in every school. My understanding is nationwide, the percentage of the population that is trans is something like 0.5%. Mm-hmm. And so if you take that and you figure a high school with several hundred or even over 1,000 students, you're likely to have more than one trans student, even if they're not out. As public acceptance has grown, people have been more willing to come out and to live publicly. And so it looks like there are more trans people, but that may not actually be true. It may just be that they're more visible and they're more represented in media and in public life.
For some folks, the even more foreign concept is gender nonconforming folks who use they/them pronouns. I know in your case, your daughter was dipping her toes into this area by using they/them pronouns. But I think for some folks, that's even more difficult to understand. If you're raised in a gender binary, it's almost like a trans woman is easier to understand than gender nonconforming they, them pronoun user.
The gender binary is enculturated. We are just so trained to think in terms of the gender binary. And yes, it's hard to get out of that. And I know that they, them pronouns can be really difficult for people. They were for us. And we are very adaptable beings, human beings. We can adapt to new knowledge. We can adapt to new circumstances. We can adapt to new challenges. And we can adapt to referring to somebody with they, them pronouns. And we can learn to let go or break down that gender binary if we're open to it. And of course, there are already people who are born outside of the biological sex binary, intersex people with lots and lots of variations. So yeah, it's a cultural thing to think in a gender binary. And if we choose, we can learn what scientists are thinking in this area and learning in this area, and we can grow.
The reason why you're here today is we've had some hearings on some bills in House Judiciary. I've heard you testify a few times. What has that experience been like to be following these bills that relate to trans youth and feeling compelled as a parent of a trans child to call in and testify?
It's a combination of difficult feelings, like anxiousness that these bills are moving forward, and distress that people are focusing on this so intensely, as well as just a really passionate determination to show up. I know that trans youth are especially vulnerable, not because they're trans, but because of social stigma and because of the harassment and bullying and that sort of thing that really can get targeted at trans youth. And these bills and the rhetoric that goes along with them can make it so much worse. Even just having them be heard, having the rights of trans youth to get the care they need, to be able to participate in sports, having those rights debated. Of course, it's a democracy. Issues that people want to put out there get to be put out there and be debated, but it is hurtful. And I personally don't encourage my daughter to track what's going on. She gets to make her own choices about it, but I don't necessarily encourage it because my first concern is her emotional health and well-being. But I can do it. I can speak up and I can show up, and I'm determined to keep showing up because it's so important. And these bills, I certainly hope they will not become law. I know that a lot of people in Alaska don't support these bills. Most of the testimony of people who have showed up at these hearings has been opposing the bills. And I just think most Alaskans believe in the freedom of people to live their lives as long as they're not hurting other people. And so this effort to clamp down on the rights of youth to be and live who they are is something that I hope more people will speak out against, and I already see it happening.
I'm going to ask a question about each bill. I'll start with the ban on trans girls playing girls' sports. And this bill in particular, I know of folks who are Democrats who, in general, line up with me on just about every policy. And they say, this one's a real hard one for me. I don't think that it's fair for trans girls to be playing sport against cis girls. And my response has always been that the bill is not about that. That if the folks who are bringing the bill forward were saying that they loved trans people and they wanted trans people to be healthy and well-adjusted and that they were really just concerned about this one fairness issue, then I think we could have a civil conversation. But when they won't even say that trans people are entitled to the same constitutional rights and protections as everyone else, to me, this is not about a competition.
Yeah. First, I would say I agree with your characterization of the issue. Actually, the first thing I would say is that this really has not caused a problem in Alaska. If we had actual instances where trans girls participating in school sports on the team that they choose, that lines up with their gender identity, if there were instances of that were really causing problems in terms of cis girls being able to win races and to get scholarships, that would be a different situation. But we don't have that situation. It really has not been an issue. So it has felt like an issue being brought in from outside of Alaska. Yeah, like you said, as a wedge issue. And second, I really agree with what you said about if there's probably a way, if there are fairness issues, there is a way to set up a process where everybody can have input and can get educated, because there's actually a lot to know about this topic. There is some research out there that's worth looking into before legislating on this issue. So if we really wanted to have a process to address fairness issues that was respectful and supportive of trans youth and respectful and supportive of cis youth, cis girls, cis youth, we could, that would be a whole different thing than what we're seeing now. Instead, what we're seeing is fear-mongering and exaggerating, a lot of exaggeration of the problem or of the what it means to have cis and trans girls compete. And so it's just being treated in a way that just cuts trans girls out and excludes them. And that's not fair. So I agree. We could have a fair process, but this is not that.
Does your trans daughter play sports?
She does not.
The next bill that I was going to ask a question about would be the governor's bill that requires permission slips to use a preferred name and pronouns in school. We debated this one, and I had a lot of questions for DEED, the Department of Education, and they, in my opinion, had no answers.
I think what I want to say about this is two things. One, just the importance of respect and what happened to respecting children, youth. And we're talking about high school kids most of the time, I would think. So these are teenagers who are soon to go out into the adult world. What happened to respecting them and just treating them with general human dignity instead of having debates about whether they get to be called by the name and pronouns that they prefer? The second thing I would say is, and many people have said this, so this is not going to be new, but for children whose parents don't support them, obviously this wasn't an issue in our family, but for youth who know their parents are not going to support them in their trans identity and in using a chosen name and different pronouns. The ability to do that at school and to be recognized amongst their peers and their teachers, where they spend a lot of their time, creates a safe space where they can take a breath and relax and be themselves. Mm-hmm. And to take that away is not good for the mental health and emotional well-being of these students. So for the people who are trying to legislate requiring parental permission, there's a lot to be said for building the kind of connection with your child that they will feel safe telling you so that you don't have to force the school to do that.
The final bill is the bill that would, as it currently stands, would give this 20-year period after any sort of trans procedures. If a minor receives a transgender-affirming procedure and they regret it at any point in the next 20 years, that they could sue the physician who performed the procedure. We've already talked about this a little bit, that we really don't do procedures on minors in America. We definitely don't do them in Alaska. To me, the bill is performative. It really won't change the current practice in any way. Having said that, though, I think some of the rhetoric around this bill in particular is really hateful. What's your experience like watching that bill move forward and be debated?
Of course, it's difficult, emotionally difficult, to hear some of the rhetoric and the testimony supporting this bill. At the same time, it's really wonderful to hear the testimony of people opposing it and just to know that so many people are paying attention and do support trans youth and do support trans youth in receiving the health care that they need. Gender-affirming care has, you know, many studies have been done that show a very low regret rate and also a pretty high, a very high rate of reduction in suicidality and just greater improvement in well-being and emotional health. So this care is life-affirming, life-saving care for many youth. And it is really important that the ability and the freedom and the right to access that care be maintained.
Would you say that your daughter's mental health is better now than prior to coming out? Like, have you seen a positive improvement in your own child's interaction with the world over the past few years?
I'm so glad you asked that question, because I did want to make that point. And yes, absolutely. It has been a delight to just see her sort of blossom and be so much happier since she's able to be her authentic self in the world. And she still has teenage challenges, just like all teenagers do, but she's navigating them and she's just genuinely happy. And it has been just a blessing to be witness to that.
Becca Bernard, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Is there any last thing, something that I didn't cover, something that you want folks to know?
I want to thank you for having me on. And I guess maybe just as a minister and as a parent, I would just like to say that the more we can lead from our hearts, you keep our hearts open to just loving and respecting people as they are, even when they're different from us, even when they're different from what we're used to or what we expect or what, you know, what we've understood the world to be. We can always grow. We can always learn more. And if we keep our hearts and our minds open, we can embrace people who are very different from us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for listening. If you like what you heard, please subscribe, rate, and review us. To contact me, email rep.andrew.gray@akleg.gov or call our office at 907-465-4940.